Good afternoon. You're listening to 101.5 FM here on UMFM. We got a great episode today, talking with two great people working through various things as a means to better their communities. Because what gets you through life? One of the best ways is just, you know, helping others, putting some good in the world, just serving your community. We'll talk with Monica Feist, as well as the executive director from North Point Douglas Women's Center. For those who don't live there, Winnipeg, Manitoba's North End often has a rough reputation. However, for Tara Zajac, there's no place she'd rather be. She knows her neighbors, those in the community care for their own, and she loves how the region almost feels like a small town. Tara is the executive director of North Point Douglas Women's Center and told me a little bit about the amazing work they're doing in the community there.
My name is Tara Zajac, and I'm the director of North Point Douglas Women's Center. I've actually been with the center for 10 years now, started as a student and thankfully never left, whether they had a choice or not. North Point Douglas Women's Center actually originally started in 1999 as the North Point Douglas Women's Group. And it was just a group of women coming together saying that we need to do something for our community. So North Point Douglas is located between, I'll see if I can get this right, between Maine and the river, and then Redwood to Higgins or Sutherland. And so we're kind of on the other side of Main Street compared to the rest of the North End is all on the other side. And so back then they got together and they started talking about how there was no resources in the neighborhood. And yes, there was a lot, especially on like Selkirk and in the North End, but Main Street was a huge barrier. And being that North Point Douglas is a low income community, a lot of our families do live in poverty, it wasn't accessible. Transportation was a big issue. A lot of people don't have vehicles. The bus system isn't always the best, so they couldn't get over there. So they started getting together at Norquay School, and then with the help of, let's see if I can remember to name everybody, the Social Planning Council of Winnipeg, North End Community Renewal Corporation, bylaws, police, fire inspectors, public health inspectors, they actually shut down the building that we're in right now. Used to be a store, and the guy was known for selling single diapers at a ridiculous cost price, selling substances he knew were not going to be used for their actual intent. And then there was also a lot of family violence in this building as well, and in their home. So they were able to get him out of the building. And when, with the help of North End Community Renewal Corporation and Social Planning Council of Winnipeg, they were able to purchase the building and make it the center that it is now. So our doors officially opened in 2002. It's amazing. And it started with 0.5 of an employee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of coming from this not so great situation to become this centralized organization that just helps the North End.
Yeah, so the center has grown a lot over the years. And then actually, so it's started as a drop-in center. So basically people could come, get a cup of coffee, maybe meet their neighbors, build relationships. And then we had donations out at the time, we had clothing donations. And that was kind of the basics of it. And then it's slowly grown to, we do a lot of advocacy work with child and family services, housing. We usually have computer access. And I'm gonna say usually a lot, just because obviously things have been different over the last 15 months due to the pandemic. And it's just slowly grown staff-wise and program to program. So about 7 years ago now, we started to recognize that we really needed to respond better to the community that we serve. 84% of those that come to our center and our program have self-identified as Indigenous and or Métis. And we knew that it was time to maybe switch some of the work we were doing, work from a healing background, follow the seven teachings. And our community was letting us know they wanted more access to ceremony. They wanted more access to traditional teachings, traditional way of life. So we really started to switch how we did stuff. So during normal times, our center would usually, and I was telling someone this yesterday, our center would usually be in operation from 9 to 9 all through the week. We have a really, really tiny building. It's about 2,000 square feet. And our drop-in space is about 400 square feet. And this is where everything happens. So our drop-in happens there, but our programming happens there as well. So the drop-in is 9 to 5, and then all of our programming happens in the evening from 6 to 9, kind of depending on it. So it's always like, we're always busy. We're open on Saturdays as well. And then Sundays, a lot of time have turned into a time where we've let community members use our space. Maybe if they have a bigger family and they need a big space to get together. We have our grandmothers who meet here sometimes on Sundays. We do skirt making, all of that kind of stuff. But so it's always happening. And for a really, really tiny space, we see, obviously this was pre-pandemic, but we had about 20,000 visits a year. So it was anywhere from like 100 to 150 people during the drop-in, and then our evening programming, depending on which one it was, because we have 5 different evening programming, so I had to do the math there for a sec, we would see from 10 to 50 people in the evenings. So it's always been happening, but yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really a cornerstone of the community there.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned a lot of programming. So walk me through a little bit about what sort of programming NPDWC offers to the North End community.
So first off, we would go back to the drop-in, which is basic needs. So in the drop-in, we hand out emergency food products, diapers, baby supplies, and then feminine hygiene products are also a big ticket item as well. And building relationships within the community, but also with the staff as well, because usually relationships are everything, right? Once you build relationships with that trust. And then the drop-in also has laundry. So we have a washer and a dryer, and it's $1 a wash, $1 a dry. So $2 a load, which if you've ever been to a laundromat, that's actually really, really cheap. We have a public access phone, which is a big deal. And then we also have a public bathroom. All these things that I think a lot of us take for granted. So that's sort of the drop-in. And then we have donations. We have a refreshment counter, usually with like toast or food if someone's donated a meal. And then in the evening, that's when we get into our into the programming. And this goes back 15 months now. It's kind of strange. But so Mondays, and hopefully in September they will start up again, was our men's sharing circle. So this started about 5 years ago. This is kind of confusing, but so on Tuesdays we have our Red Road to Healing program, which is healing from domestic violence, and we also say family violence, recognizing that a lot of the families that we do work with have a lot of the intergenerational trauma. And it's not just partner and partner violence, there's also a lot of family violence that happens. We have this Red Road to Healing program, which was developed by Shannon Buck, who's an amazing lady, and we're very thankful that she's a part of our extended family. And it's a 10-week program. It's based on the 7 teachings, and it's working through that trauma and that abuse. And it's for women only. And it is, it's a closed group. People do have to sign up for it. So we had that on Tuesdays, and the women were saying that, so we've been doing that for about 8 years now, and they were saying that there was nothing for the men. Yes, men are allowed in certain hours, and they could access certain things, but part of the problem is that the men were still reliving a lot of the past, hadn't anywhere to heal or anything like that. And a lot of our women, and I'm myself having been a victim of domestic violence, we're still with the partners that were abusing them, or maybe at home, and recognizing that, you know, it's not always easiest to leave a partner. So we actually started a men's sharing circle. So the men would have a safe space. Sorry, I get like goosebumps and I want to cry, but like a safe space to come and to talk and to heal. And then also Mitch Bourbonnais and Billy Dubry are the ones that have run it. So they would also bring in elders for teachings. They would smudge, they would drum. And initially when we started the men's healing circle, sharing circle, the idea was to make it an action group. Maybe they would get more involved with Mama Bear Clan or the community. And the men, through evaluation and just conversation, have let us know that they just need that safe space. They need a safe space where it's okay if they cry, it's okay if they get emotional, because a lot of men were brought up
no worries.
That wasn't okay. So that's Mondays, And then Tuesdays is our Red Road to Healing program. And then Wednesdays is our parenting program. We used to do Nobody's Perfect Parenting. And once again, responding to the community, we actually redeveloped the program, and it's now called Family Tree Parenting Program. Sorry, I always get it mixed up. And so we actually took Nobody's Perfect Parenting and then the Indigenous Traditional Parenting, and kind of with a lot of evaluation and collaboration made this little mesh of the two, because parents were telling us they, you know, a lot of them needed the Nobody's Perfect because maybe they needed the certificate to show child and family services, or they wanted to learn how to be better parents, because maybe they weren't taught necessarily all the skills that some of us were, but they also wanted that traditional side. So we started doing that. And just to give you like a feel, when we were doing Nobody's Perfect Parenting, we would have 5 to 7 people. And as to now, because we're actually still running it online via Zoom right now, we had to cut it off at 20 people, and we have a waiting list of another 20 people. So doing the adjustment in responding to the community was huge, and it means more people are accessing our programming. It was great. And then Thursdays is our Women's Warrior Circle. And they also still meet via Zoom, and hopefully now with the restrictions changing, they will be in person again. So they're pretty excited. They just meet at McKelvin Park down the street from us. But so this came also from, we've had a lot of women that were, once again, going back to the Red Road to Healing program and also the drop-in, that were saying they wanted more. They wanted, more space to be free, to be able to share and talk, but they also wanted to take some action. They didn't want it just to be about healing or sharing circles. So Women's Warrior Circle, they actually were the ones that helped develop and start our Mama Bear Clan. So Mama Bear Clan actually came out of this amazing group of Women's Warrior, and like so glad they continue on with us. But so they were the ones that started Mama Bear Clan, helped develop Mama Bear Clan. Still to this day, they do fundraising for Mama Bear Clan. They also actually do their own fundraising for themselves as well. They have a drum group now, they do teachings, they do medicine picking, and they're just this amazing group of women. So that's Thursdays. And then Fridays and Sundays is our Mama Bear Clan Patrol. So our Mama Bear Clan Patrol, the way I'll use Mitch Bourbonnais' words, it's a hug for the community. We're not security, we're not doing any vigilante, we're just there to check up on people. We have been very fortunate with donations that we hand out 100, and this is even during the pandemic, 100 bag lunches, and then they hand them out, they pick up needles. If it's during the winter time, we have jackets and scarves and mitts, and they just walk around the community checking up on people. And they really the Mama Bear Clan, the captains and the volunteers, they're really there, like they're coming from their heart. It's a lot of heart work they're doing, and it's just to be there for the community and see what we need, and maybe adjusting what we take. Like we started taking safe sex supplies out because they let us know they needed these supplies, and we'd much rather have people be safe than not be safe. And then during the pandemic, Mama Bear Clan's really been doing a lot of the outreach on, I hate to say education, but informing people about the changes, whether it was the changes in restrictions or the vaccines or whatever, because a lot of our people that either come to the center and or that Mama Bear Clan see don't have access to the computer and their smartphone and all of this sort of stuff, right? So they didn't know stuff. But yeah, so that's like a really quick little glimpse of what we do at the center. And I'm missing 500 things. Yeah. But at all of this, like everything we do has come from the community. I always make the joke with people that like, I could never even change the color of the bathroom if I wanted to without consulting the community. But that's just, that is truly how we are. We're literally, if we were doing flooring a couple of years ago and we had the community like, which one do you like the most? Because this is their space. This is their center. That's who it matters. That's what we're here for, right? So yeah, so that's a little blip of what we do.
like you mentioned, action oriented, you know, getting involved in the community, making a difference. And for many people, like, they just hear about the North End, like, oh, it's scary, oh, don't go there. But it's like, there's people living there. This is their community. They've been there their whole lives.
So I was brought up in North Kildonan, well, Nova Scotia and North Kildonan. And I chose to move back to the North End. My dad grew up in the North End. So I've lived here for 20 years now. And when I started at this center, I'd lived in the area for 10 years, but hadn't really been too involved in the community. And then I started at this center. And my second day at the center, we had, at the time, it was called our Christmas feast. And Investors Group put this big event on, and like Santa Claus came, and there was presents, and there was a turkey dinner. And you had these people, like you had Investors Group, so like people in suits. And then you had us, like us employees dressed like elves. And then you had the community, and everybody came together to make sure that, hey, did your kid make sure that he got this present? Did you get this? Or, you know what? I know that you have kids. I don't need these fruit sacks that I got in my Christmas hamper. And they all made sure everybody was fed and everybody stayed and helped and cleaned up. And even to this day, this is one of the reasons why I think many of us love the North End, because it's such a small town mentality within the city, within Winnipeg, and with a lot of people seeing the North End as a negative. There is so much good. Like, the minute I walk outside, people are saying, hey, Tara, how are you doing? Not too long ago in the winter, I'd snuck outside for a sec to check on something. And I had a lady who was living, who I know, but she lives in one of the encampments. She came over and I wasn't wearing a jacket. So she took her jacket and gave it. And I was like, I don't, thank you very much. And she would not let me. But people, I think a lot of people, they have this conception because of what they see on the news and what they read, that it's not a safe place. It's not a good place. But working in this community and also living in the community and raising a 10-year-old boy on my own, I know my neighbors. My neighbors will let me know if somebody was knocking at my door at 9 o'clock in the morning or what. Like, we do take care of each other. And it is almost, it's a small town within the middle of the city.
Yeah. So there's definitely a mental disconnect from the rest of Winnipeg, how they perceive yes. the North End then. So you talked about the size of your space and something exciting that's going on, the Great Canadian Giving Challenge. What exactly is this, and kind of the exciting news of what can come out of it?
Great Canadian Giving Challenge is something that Canada Helps puts on every year. And basically is trying to get people to give more. And for every $3 that charities get, we get one kind of ticket in to win 20 grand. And so we do this every year. We've done this for the last 3 years, I believe. And this year we decided to do it for our capital campaign. It's kind of, we're calling it like a soft launch. So like I mentioned, our building is 2,000 square feet. It's smaller than a lot of people's homes in the rest of the city. And the amount that we squeeze in here, I joke and like, you kind of see my office, like there's boxes there.
Yeah.
Every square inch is taken and we need a new building. The center actually started a capital campaign in 2007. And for whatever reason, it didn't happen. And then I had started to look into one in March 2020, and then the pandemic hit. So that got sidetracked.
Yep.
And now we're doing it, and we're just doing it. There's no more sidetrack. There's no more ifs, ands, and buts. And the big thing, so every dollar or every $3 that people get gives us an entry to win 20 grand. But it's also just a matter to put it out there and let people know we are starting a capital campaign. So middle of July, there's going to be a lot more news. Like, well, it'll be like, bam, in your face. But right now, it's just letting people know, because anyone who's ever come to our building, like, it's unbelievable. And I'm not just saying this because I work here, but it's actually unbelievable what the staff and the community and everyone is able to do in this tiny, tiny space. But the fact is that we are on top of each other. We really have to, worry about who's using what space when, because like I said, the drop-in is our only space. So this is program, drop-in, board meetings, any other committee meetings, all have to happen. And we can't really grow much right now. Like, our staff are on top of each other. So it was just, it's time. And so we're trying to do this capital campaign, and I need to say to everyone that's given to the Great Canadian Giving Challenge. It's been amazing. We've almost reached our goal, and we still have a week left.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, having that space will just make it feel all the different, almost.
Yeah, and it's our community. Like, they deserve it. They deserve to have a proper space where they can go, and whether it's, you know, maybe there's a child minding room and they can get a little bit of a break from the children, or they can learn to cook, or they can do their resumes. We need it, but they deserve it. Hopefully, you know, in the next couple years, we'll be celebrating some breaking ground, or I don't know what they call it.
Breaking ground or ribbon cutting, whatever it is.
And then we also have the endowment fund.
Yes.
Which I had to, I won't lie, just because I'm not exactly, I don't know about other people, but investments aren't exactly my thing. So basically the endowment fund is an investment fund that it generates annual income through the Winnipeg Foundation. So, to put it in terms I know I understand, is that we have given the Winnipeg Foundation funds, and they invest and they protect them for us. And then we're kind of like, and we get interest off of this, and that will go, right now is just going to go to operational cost. Once again, this is something that the center has wanted to do, including the capital campaign too, for many, many years. And due to many obstacles, it was never able to happen. With an endowment fund, you do need a certain pot of money to start. And we've been, and once again, thank you to everybody. We have been so thankful. So I'm gonna start crying again. We have been so thankful over the last few years that we have really grown our donor base. Whether it's people's time or monetary donations or food or we are floored, constantly floored with the giving. And I want to thank Winnipeggers and Manitobans, because I know we're the most generous people I think in the world. But we've even gotten donations from like the States. We've had some from Europe. But the endowment fund, awesome, and also the capital campaign fund would not be possible if it wasn't for the donations that we get. So hopefully the endowment fund will keep growing, and it helps alleviate the financial burden that is on the director of applying for funding or getting the more donations in. And it's just somewhat, as much as an investment can be, a guaranteed income every year. So every year, hopefully it'll grow and we'll have more and more funds.
And like, an investment in the center is an investment in the community.
Thank you. Exactly. And this community is 120% worth it. Yeah.
Of course. We've talked a lot about the programs, some cool funds and initiatives to help make the center grow and help with the community. But how can we as a community continue to empower women and women of color?
I don't know how much time you have to talk, because this could be a really long conversation.
Take as much time as you like.
So I think from a center perspective, from an organizational perspective, a couple of the big things for us is, first off, creating a safe space for women and women of color. To be a space that is their own, a space where they are safe. They don't have to feel any threats or worry about threats coming in, but they can also continue to make their own space. I think that's really important. And then also, well, from a central perspective, it is about having, I'm losing my words right now. When it comes to, I am losing my words. Having inclusive hiring policies as well, right? That's a big deal. Especially when we do what for us, when we do hire, we do try to hire people from the community. We want to hire people with lived experience, because you can only learn so much from a textbook. But I think from the bigger, from how people support in their own community or in communities like ours, is to advocate. It's to take a stand. It's to support, I will support women and women in color. But, you know, call your local MLA or your MP and make sure they're standing up for the policies that they said they would, or call them out if they have voted on a policy that they probably shouldn't have. It's about advocating for things like affordable housing, affordable daycare, well, childcare, all of these things that a lot of times, even for people, women that may have a partner, they do fall on the woman to take care of. And then I think actually on a personal like note, and I think we can all do this in our own lives, is standing up when somebody makes that off comment, or they make that maybe that rape joke. It's standing up and saying, this isn't okay. This will not be tolerated. And it's also, I will say, it's also educating our children. Totally think that it takes the village to raise the children, and our children are definitely mirror images of us. And I think as not even just as parents, but I think most of us have children at some form in our lives, and it's educating them. But I think the big thing and is especially just like standing up. I'm still surprised with some of the sexism and the racism that goes on. And ask people and volunteer, give your time. As much as I want everyone to donate or to come to our center and volunteer with us or walk with Mama Bear Clan or bring us a box of tampons, which organization works for you? Who is speaking to you, and how can you can help them out? Whether it's our center or maybe North End Women's Center or Andrew Street Family Center, talk to them, see what they need, but support us, because it's tough. Yes, I think that's it. Yes.
So you mentioned a number of ways, you know, there's monetary, volunteer. How can we continue to help support not only the center, but the North End?
Once again, I call people and ask people. things do change so fast. I can't think of any nonprofit, but all of us could always use monetary donations. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people actually understand necessarily. I know I didn't know how nonprofits worked before I came into this world exactly. But we depend on the monetary donations, and we are the most frugal, stretch a dollar, like at it's amazing how we spend our money. But from there, it's donations too. People, and especially, you know, right now it's the heat. So bring a case of water. People always need food. A big thing actually right now that we've been handing out is pet food, because mm-hmm. people have cats and they have dogs. And maybe, you know, because dog food can be kind of expensive. And I hate to say it, but for a lot of us, our dogs are our best friends. But giving us donations of monetary stuff, non-perishable food items, and time. I love people's time. It's hard during the pandemic. Things are starting to open up. So like our Mama Bear Clan, starting this Sunday, will be accepting volunteers again. Another 10 volunteers per night, yes. But your time is so valuable. And even when we had to switch from when COVID hit and we had to shut our doors as much as we felt comfortable with, but we couldn't have our volunteers in. It was a huge thing for all of us staff, because we depend on people and giving us your time to make sandwiches, to organize these donations, to go pick up these donations for us. And so I don't think like your time. And then also just your word of mouth. Talk about us. Whoever you, whether it's our center or another organization, share our post. Tell your friends that you've heard about this great organization, North Point Douglas Women's Center, and do what you can. I think a lot of it, and especially Winnipeg, it's a word of mouth kind of place. It's just, that's how we communicate. And just get creative, do what you can. I'll give a quick example. My son, because I love talking about him, for his 11th birthday, because he can't do a party, he's collecting donations for the Winnipeg Humane Society. He picked the wrong charity, But like, be creative. What can you do? We've had people drive around just picking up boxes of feminine hygiene products. Yeah, but I do get in trouble for this, but like, find what your passion is. Cause I feel like when people can put it where their heart is,
yeah,
it means that much more to them. And if you want more information, call us and ask us. We love talking about our work. We could talk for days about us. So yeah, and it's don't ever be afraid. I would say to call and ask. I will say, as a center, we really appreciate, and we appreciate everything. But when people call and say, I'm going to Superstore today, what do you need? And then I can tell you. But yeah, I think that covers what we need. Is that, yeah, that covers.
Give North Point Douglas Women's Center a call. I'm sure Tara and the others at the center would love to hear from you. You can also visit their website to donate to the Great Canadian Giving Challenge or contribute to their endowment fund. However, the best thing you can do is give your time and volunteer. Monica Feist has dedicated herself to helping others. Monica's life's passion and activities have been as recognized workforce development advocate and change leader for equality and employment access issues regarding immigrants, women, other abled individuals, Indigenous peoples, and youth. I had the opportunity to talk with Monica a little bit about the work she does and how she sees and what she believes are ways to help make the world a better place.
I'm Monica Feist. I'm with Success Skills Center as the CEO and basically as a chief executive officer. I guess I'm the one who has to get the money for the organization and make sure that it operates to the best of its abilities. We have a staff of six. We've with government grants, you go up and down. So we've reduced to six as a result of the COVID, and all our staff were working until just last week. We've had several contracts, and those contracts are almost finished. And so I've again had to lay off staff. I laid off staff last March as well. What we do is we work with immigrant professionals and skilled workers. We help them in terms of getting their doing pre-employment training, make sure that they're able to present themselves well. That includes such things as making sure that they've got professional resumes. They have they know how to write a good letter of introduction. The thank yous. We do a whole pre-employment program, basically, where they go through learning how to be interviewed and, you know, how to answer questions in a professional manner. They get cross-cultural education. We do some Indigenous awareness training. We have a couple of programs, such as a networking program called the Connector Program. We have a partnership with six other agencies, immigrant agencies in Winnipeg, that also help people find jobs. And then they refer individuals to that particular program. So then we bring in volunteers. We have business community volunteers coming in. They can be owners of companies or managers or staff that have been recommended to work with us, as well as people from the Rotary Club and other organizations, business organizations. Anyway, they participate and do some of the mentoring that's involved in the networking. So in some cases, individuals start developing mentors from that, or they get the one-on-one to be able to, you know, try and find out more about the different companies and so on, and who they could be working for, what their particular sector is doing, who is in the sector. In the networking, they'll get a referral or they get three referrals if they join the networking program with the specific employer that they may be, or the specialist in the field that they may be assigned to. And from there, they go to another three, because that person then sends them to someone else still, and so on. So we provide the whole rounded sphere of employment preparation, and also support, and obviously career counseling. We work with the individuals to get them to get their papers certified, look at what they may still need. Sometimes they're told by the professional association that they only have credits for so and so much in their program of studies. So there are times we'll go back to those associations to negotiate additional courses for credit and so on. So we do a variety of troubleshooting as well as part of the program, as long as, you know, when the client, you know, is with us. And also they may go to work and still have problems, so we carry on with them in that way. So we may provide them with counseling assistance or career counseling assistance. Or if they're running into a problem, if somebody's giving them a difficult time, how they might handle it on the job. So there's a variety of support systems that we put in place. We are a hub, the Manitoba referral, for a program called FAST, which is a program that helps people go through faster on some of the certification programs, for instance, in the accounting, in the biotech, and a couple of other fields. We're just about to be established as the Manitoba hub as the referral hub for the World Educational Services that does the assessments on people's credentials. I'm just trying to think of all the different things we do. We do internships. So we have several internship contracts where we place people with employers for a certain period of time. We had the present ones that we have. One was for 16 weeks and another one was for 20 weeks. One was for IT specifically. So we were training people bringing people in for IT training. So they get individualized training as well as training, group training through the program. Just trying to think. Oh, we do so much.
Yeah, it sounds like your organization is really involved.
Yes. Yeah, our intent is to get immigrants back to their occupations as quickly as possible. We generally don't go do change occupations. In other words, we try to stick within the related occupation. Often the individuals have to, let's say you're an accountant back home. While you're getting your certification here, you may be working for an accounting firm or for an accountant. So you're getting time in the job, which counts in terms of the required hours, et cetera. Plus you're getting paid.
Yeah, keeping those skills sharp.
Keeping the skills sharp and becoming familiar with some of the, with the work that's involved and so on. And at the same time, you are either getting your credentials assessed, which may take 6 weeks to 2 months, could take longer sometimes, depends. And at the same time, as you're registering for courses and so on, at least you're earning an income while you're in, you know, within the field. So we try to get people close to that. Then it's up to the individual if they've got the desire.
The gumption.
The gumption was the word, yes. I didn't want to say that. The gumption to go ahead. You know, I always say, you know, you've got to be hungry. And I don't mean it in terms of starvation. I mean it in terms of you really want to do the job that you've done before, that you want to get back to that level. And so it really is up to you if you do want to. Those that do, I can tell you, I just got a message from Rani, one of our staff. She was working with one of our lawyers. Usually they get advised by, we give different advice than the community does, because we've had so much experience in the field. You know, there are specialized programs that move you faster. And we had a lawyer. And I just got a message that tells me, let me just find it, and I'll just read it to you. I was really impressed. Where's my work thing? I got to get back to, I keep on having a problem. It's in the WhatsApp. Sorry there. There it is. Here it is. Got it. It's Rani, one of our counselors, just said, I would like to share with you that so-and-so, I won't give the name, accepted a position as a lawyer. I'm very happy today. It took 3 years of process. It was a slow process, but worth it. She took 8 courses in 2 years. So she did it in, it was a 3-year process because she had to apply, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But she did the courses in 2 years, and that would have been, she would have been working. Yeah. We've had other individuals have taken the whole time off because they have a partner who can support them and so on. But, you know, you have those kind of situations. And we have that for lawyer, not only for lawyers. There are similar programs available for fast-tracking programs for engineers, for example, and for others. You know, you've got people coming here already certified internationally. So it means that they're already on the last leg of being certified here, but often they're told to go back to Red River College or wherever and take those courses, which are just at the beginning of the process. So they really need a lot better advice than what they've been getting in general. And that's what we do. We give them the best advice that can be possibly done for their particular occupation. And based on our experience, people move through faster. But as I say again, you've got to be hungry. You've got to want to do it. That does mean you're going to have to sometimes, not always, sometimes people do get certified all the way through right away. We have had some teachers that automatically got through, as an example, but they didn't think that they could. You know, so then we'd say, well, you know, you got to try. Here's what you got to do. So we take every person as an individual case, as a puzzle to be solved. And our intent is to solve the puzzle. And if the person goes with us all the way, it'll happen. Yeah,
they'll find that success.
Then the other thing we do is we work a lot with medical doctors. Provide special consultations. Also, we do specialized interviewing practice with them in terms of the interviews that they're going to have when they're being interviewed, either to get into a program or if they're going or prior to a residency, etc. So we do a whole myriad of things. We'll even help them with their specific letters that they have to prepare. We walk them from one end to the other. They're doing the work, though. Please understand.
Yeah, of course.
We provide the facilitation, the guidance, the advice, but they still have to do the work. It's not done for them. And so they've earned, every one of them who gets there, they've earned it on their own merit because they have that capacity, and we know that they do.
Yeah, you're just helping them get, you know, down that route a little bit.
We're facilitating.
That's a good word for it.
Right. Yeah. We're facilitating their journey. Other people call it helping them navigate the route. And we provide the different pieces of advice that they may need as they go along that route.
You're also heavily involved in social justice initiatives and organizations. So there was Immigrant Women's Association of Manitoba, Success Skills Center, Reaching Equality, Reestablishment of the Junior Achievement in Manitoba, and Women's Employment Counseling Center. What is the importance of these kind of social justice initiatives and organizations, and why did you want to be involved in these?
Well, I guess each one of them have different interests that I've had in my life. Going back on the junior achievement, I was a junior achiever in its very first program in Winnipeg back in 1960, I believe it was 65, I believe. And it was a valuable program. I was in it for 2 years. I believe it was grade 11 and 12, if I recall. And I gained a lot of knowledge. The company that I was with happened to be Great West Life at the time. And Great West Life advisors were just absolutely fabulous with us as kids. Taught us well. We did well. Our company did extremely well in the program. Individually, I think we all gained a lot of skills and confidence, which is an extremely important one, confidence in moving forward with our life and what we wanted to do, aside from learning how business operates. It's important to know how business operates and what all the concerns are. And you got it firsthand because we went through the process. So I was really keen when I was approached to sit on the board of directors to rejuvenate the organization. So I had my commitment. I was paying back to an organization that helped me in terms of my personal development, which I still feel today. In terms of the Immigrant Women's Association, well, that got started as a result of what is now called the Immigrant Center, which was at that time called the International Center, had conferences for immigrant women. I guess there was some funding from the government that they got. So they had yearly conferences and they'd get together and talked, but they talked. And everybody said, oh, this was wrong, and so on. So then finally what we did was I was invited to join the group it was basically to come down because it was happening. First I was asked to speak to the group. So I did a speech at the conference. And I happened to say some things, because at that time I was with the federal government, whereby, I mentioned that I felt that people were putting into little cubby holes, and particularly women. And because of the stereotyping, of course, women weren't getting into the kind of jobs and the background that some of the women had. And there were immigrant women professionals within that context that I was referring to specifically. You know, we had women doctors, we had women lawyers, we had women engineers. This is back in the 70s from other countries around the world. And I was challenged on it, but nevertheless, after the conference, I sat down with some of the people who were organizing the conference, and I said, it's nice of you to talk about things, but I think you're going to have to start putting some resolutions in place, and maybe it's useful if you're also an organization, a formal organization. And then they got together. First of all, I got together with them to start organizing the different issues that they had. Some of them were with the government, with the department that I was with. I was with at that time. That time it was called Canada Manpower, which we had changed to employment. It became Employment and Immigration. We then started putting all the different issues, and I suggested, okay, some of them were federal issues, some of them were provincial issues, let's divide them up. And so we did, and then I suggested to them, they write to every government department on the different issues to the ministers and ask for very specific answers, whether it was daycare or pay, you know, and so on. So that's what we did. And so the Immigrant Women's Association formed, I think it was 77, 78, somewhere in that time, and started operating and started lobbying. Now, right now, I think they're sort of in a transition. I haven't heard much from them, but I'm going to be checking in on them again to see where things are at, because it's been very quiet at that end. Some of the other things, Success Skills Center, well, actually before that, it was as a result of that and meeting a lot of immigrant immigrant professionals, I suggested that why don't we, because there was money available for women at that time because of the International Year of Women, the government put aside, which was my job, money for women. And I said, why not start an organization that helps these women get back to their occupation and generally speaking, helping women, because at that time, back in the mid 70s and just late 70s, women were just starting to get back to the workforce. There was a heavier demand for employment and so on. And two people needed to work to support the family already. So that organization was formed, Women's Employment Counseling Service. Somebody came to see us and we approved the project and got Women's Employment Counseling Service, which then became Employment Projects of Winnipeg at the end. Then a number of years later, someone came to see me in my office when I was still with the federal government. And she had a lot of background in with languages and so on, and she was looking to do something. And I said, well, you know, the one thing that I'm not seeing yet is, although we have the Women's Employment Counseling Service, I think we need a specialized service for immigrant professionals that work with, you know, to get them back to their occupations. It's a little bit more complicated than what can be handled in general. So that's what she did. She went and I said, you know, put the project together, come back. Again, we found money for her. And she started an immigrant women's project for professionals.
Amazing.
5 years, I left in 85, the government, and went into consultation. I joined a consulting firm as a consultant. And about four years later, I guess, after I left, she came back to me and said, Monica, I've got to leave. You're the only one who understands what needs to be done. Could you take the contract on? And I was very busy at the time because I was helping somebody write a book on the Sioux of Canada. And I just said, oh, I've got that, plus my consulting contract, plus I've just had a baby. I'm really busy. Anyway, I ended up saying, okay, I'll do 10 months if that's what you have to do to finish your contract. So I finished her contract. And we just kept getting more people coming at the door. And I put in another project. And I'm still there today.
That's how it goes. So, you're like, okay, yeah, I'll do this one job. And then...
yeah, it becomes your lifelong venture, it seems.
So, I mean, now we're seeing more social services throughout the years coming up. What work still needs to be done in workplace development to remove barriers?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that. Somebody just asked me the other day what did I think about resumes where you didn't have the name on it? And would that remove discrimination? And so I said no. And so they were surprised. And the reason I say no is that if on the resume you're still going to put in where you got your degree, I'm just using that as an example, yeah, what country you were coming from, then you know, you're not much further ahead when the person on the other side might still be biased. So to me, all I would like to see is resumes, blind resumes, so that you don't know whether it's a male or female, and that the individual responds to the competencies that are required for the job, and that they are interviewed on the competencies, as opposed to what country, what university, and so on. Because the moment you look at the university, you know where they're from. you know, and if you've got any biases, it's going to happen. Now, are you going to hire them and you don't like them? And that's a whole other issue. You know, this is where a lot of education has to come into play. So, yeah, I'd like to see the one is have that removed. And, you know, it's been proven, you know, they've proven it with music, especially. You've heard about the blind study on that. I mean, there's been blind studies done where they had they've done it with resumes, which showed a difference in terms of the hires that resulted. They've done it with musicians where they played behind a screen, made sure that the floor was carpeted just in case there was a woman that was coming in with a clickety-clack.
Yeah, heels on, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and then they had them play. And immediately the hiring of the women musicians went through the roof. So, you know, to me, I'd like to see competencies be the judgment, be judged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if people are qualified for the job, they deserve it.
If you meet certain requirements, in other words, you got the right degree, then you accept that. You have such and such knowledge in such and such a subject, meets that. Then you go and you go for what the actual questions are. I mean, I would probably go as far as if you could do it so that you can't tell whether it's a male or female answering. You know, you can't tell the color of the skin. You can't tell the accent. You can't, you know, all those kind of things, because people really do make judgments. You know, I mean, I can recall, it's not now so much, but I can recall where I have taken individuals and to the workplace where I would realize that this employer is not going to hire. You know, I mean, I haven't experienced that lately, but then I haven't taken people to the workplace and my staff haven't mentioned anything to me that they've experienced it, but they could have. I just think that I do still get the feedback, oh, they speak with an accent. Big deal. Get used to it.
Yeah, get used to it. Just live with it.
Tune into 101.5 FM every Tuesday afternoon at 1 to hear more stories and music from fantastic people across Canada. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.